the past.
Save the future.
The present.
Save the dogs.
The future.
And save the poetry.
You are listening to COL Movies.
Frankly, lady, I don't give a damn. I'm gonna make him an offer again.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
Go ahead. Make my day.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
May the force be with you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to COL Movies, the movie podcast about movies. I don't know. You have no tagline, as far as I know. As long as it's not the tagline to Yogi Bear. Anyways, this is reel number 13. I would like to introduce my crazy co-host. There we go. On the spur of the moment. We'll start off with the craziest Ray. Ray, how are you doing?
I'm doing just fine.
Excellent. And of course, there's Steve. Steve, how you doing?
I know. Always the afterthought. cry/cry.
13th episode. 13th episode. We made it to 13. And are we going to survive is my only question on this one.
Are we going to survive this podcast? Do you mean?
Yeah, is this going to be the best or worst podcast? Predictions.
Who knows? I don't know. Why would it be the worst?
13.
It just means it's unlucky. It doesn't mean it's the worst.
Okay, good point. All right, so let's go into.
You can always just not have a 13th episode. You know, like they don't have 13 floors. You know, 13 floors and. You know, they say
I vote for 12 and three quarters.
There you go. There we go.
Where's reel number 12 and three quarters?
There you go.
Renaming this right now, it is episode number 12 and three quarters.
Too bad it's not 12 and three quarters monkeys.
And of course, someone rang the doorbell. And dogs are. Right. Hold on. No, I do not need my lawn mowed. Thank you. So, let's go on with the first news story of the day. James Cameron talks Avatar re-release, sequels, and the future of 3D. Future of 3D, I think, is the most important part about this. He believes that these 3D up conversions suck, even though he's doing Titanic and. Doing a 3D conversion of Titanic, but he's working on it for 8 months to a year, so he's taking his darn time. And he's basically saying that in a couple of years here, there will be thousands of 3D cameras out there shooting live feeds to 3D broadcast networks. So how can a producer go to a studio and say, I can't shoot 3D, it's too difficult, because there's going to be 3D cameras out there. So there's no excuse on that one. Mm-hmm. My big thing on this one is Avatar sequels? Really?
Yeah, unnecessary. Completely unnecessary.
Yeah, and he doesn't really give a whole lot of details either in this article, other than we're just working on the deals. We won't start the movie until we have the deals worked out. So,
James Cameron is also known for really working on the movie, making sure that when he does go into filming it, and getting the movie taken care of, that it does end up being a good movie. So he's known to take his time in production that he needs in order to get it done.
And they do make a note here too that they're planning, at least that if it happens, the chances are he's going to shoot Avatar 2 and 3 back to back.
Except so then he clarifies in here, you know, like Lord of the Rings and stuff. It's just. Destroys the career. Well, on these movies, there's not necessarily a lot of live action stuff. There's a lot of computer generating environments and everything, so they won't necessarily need as many people, and it shouldn't be as much of a drain on people. Mm-hmm. So that can be really good for that. So And an extra 9 minutes in the re-release later this month, not an extra 8, as he said. Big Ooh. Deal. I mean, I wonder, I'm still not all about the re-release. I find that it's way too early for anything.
Has anybody? I wonder if anybody's done the math, like figure out, okay, how much that first movie cost to make, and then they're adding a whole 9 minutes to it. So I just wonder how much that 9 minutes is actually going to cost them to do.
And well, it sounds like most of that 9 minutes is CG.
Right.
So it's they it's not like they're having a full stage crew or something.
No, there. But CG is not necessarily cheap either. It's cheaper than some practical effects sometimes, but it's not necessarily, especially his level of CG in this movie. I mean,
true.
It's a lot of work. It's a lot of people.
So, we'll see what happens. Yeah. Happens. I don't see the point of re-releasing it now. I can see the point of re-releasing it later. As I right. said the last time we talked about this, you know, 5-10 years down the line doing a re-release, sure. Or even right before, like, Avatar 2, if he actually does a sequel here, right before it, like a month or two before it, re-release the movie with the extra 9 minutes. That way people get excited for the next movie, and then they go see the next movie. But the point of releasing it now makes no sense to me. Even if there is an extra 9 minutes.
Unless it's some kind of plot point to try to see if people are interested enough in seeing an Avatar 2.
Right. I mean, it's kind of breaking from the typical Hollywood re-release, which is movie comes out, movie does well, movie gets nominated for some sort of award, so movie gets re-released. So all the people that, you know, didn't see it in the first run go and see it before the awards come out. And then when it gets released to DVD, it gets the theatrical version. And then there's the director's cut. And then there's the special edition. That's the typical Hollywood trek. So I think the weird thing here is that we're going to sort of, it's like a special edition theatrical release, which we're not too used to over here in the States. They do that a lot in Japan, though. But that's with a lot of animation-based stuff. They maybe release stuff over and over and over again, adding certain things or changing things around.
Well, when you look at it stateside, the best example of a re-release would end up being the Star Wars movies. Because mm-hmm. they released, 15 years after... Something like that. It's 1997 or something like that.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
So 20 years?
20 years from the original.
So you got 20 years there, and that was that's a sweet spot. And that's when he put out the first special edition. I mean, right now it's on like revision 3 or 4 right now because they had that special edition, but then in the... After the prequels came out, they added in Hayden Christensen as Anakin instead, which
sacrilege.
Besides the fact that he looks like what he was at the beginning, at the end of the prequels, mm-hmm. but then 17 years down the line, which is when the next one comes back, I don't think he's going to essentially. Like, if he didn't have all those the cyborg enhancements, I don't think he's still going to look like that. You know, he's going to have aged. And I think what they had for the original was perfectly fine.
Well, right. Well, if they're going to take it that far, they might as well do a CG head and re-release Return of the Jedi and stick his head on inside the mask when he pulls it off at the end. I mean, really.
Somehow have him bald or something. But yeah. Anyways. But that's a little bit of...
Yeah.
So Avatar re-releasing on the 27th, I think it was. With 9 extra minutes of footage for all those people who want to do that. I'm going to just skip it.
The 27th of this month is coming out?
Yeah, August 27th this month.
Well, if I ain't got nothing better to do while I'm in Boston, maybe I'll go see it.
I don't think it's worth seeing it. Sequel, meh. in 3D upconversion.
But aren't you so excited about the 3D upconversion re-release of Titanic?
Oh, totally. Hold me back. Yeah.
I hope they do the Celine Dion video beforehand in 3D.
Oh, three, so dear God, no. Bump.
Let's watch
Why
your
you
chest.
Think I don't want to see that movie ever anyways.
Here, there's nothing I fear. Whatever. I just want to see your chest bump in 3D.
Wherever you are.
I've got bad visions of turkey neck now. Thank you very much.
Kill me.
Yeah, so there's I haven't seen Titanic, and I doubt that I'm going to see it in 3D either, unless the ship sinks faster.
I'm here for you, bro.
Thank you.
Okay,
but
so
it is kind of odd, though. I do find it kind of interesting that he's talking about how bad upconversion is and all this kind of stuff, but yet he spends a good part of this article, or at least, you know, the writer spent a good part of this article discussing the upconversion of Titanic.
Well, and I think
they were very picky about it.
I think part of it is, you know, that article we talked about a week or two ago, or maybe it was in a letter, about how long it actually takes to do a good version, while everybody else is essentially speeding it out. It is possible to get a decent 3D upconversion. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's possible. I don't know. I have my severe doubts about that.
All those poor children.
I'm going to see Reborn in 3D, you know. But I think right now they're doing the upconversion, but what he's basically saying here is we're doing it now for my Titanic upconversion that I'm planning on doing, I'm going to make sure to take the time to do it right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if it takes a year and a half before he gets it done, just because he didn't like what it was at a year. It's like, we need to go back. We need to get this better until it's perfect. So that's just a James Cameron thing.
True.
But moving on. Moving on into the Is This News department. So I was looking through my feeds from all these news sites, and I'm keep seeing over and over again that Elvis Presley's granddaughter, Riley Kano,
Keo,
is in talks for Mad Max Fury Road. What I want to know is, really?
Why is this such a big deal?
Why is this such a big deal? It's like on every single one. Like, I would understand if this was like on one of them, but I swear, I was looking through my feeds in Google Reader and I saw it like five times from five different sites. And I'm like, really? Is this a really big thing? And it's, I think they're pulling out mainly because it's AKA the granddaughter of Elvis Presley. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, who cares? Maybe that would be an interesting factoid about her when you go back and take a look. Oh, Riley was the granddaughter of Elvis Presley. Oh, that's kind of cool. But
right. I mean,
news. Does this deserve post?
She's kind of, I mean, she's only been in one movie. I don't even know if it's been released or not. I haven't seen it. The Runaways, about Joan Jett. And,
oh, okay.
And she's been in that. And then she's got two more movies coming out in the next year. So, I don't know, maybe they're just kind of expecting her to blow up or be the next big thing. So, they're just, she's hired some publicists and they're just going to town, pushing as much as they can. So,
let everybody know that in the next Mad Max movie, starting Tom Hardy, by the way.
She may not be a big deal, but we're going to make her sound like she's a big deal. So, everybody will be
interested. This is going to get everybody in. Everybody's going to be interested in Mad Max Fury Road just to see the granddaughter of Elvis Presley act. Mm-hmm.
Nope. Tom Hardy in 3D.
Yeah,
that's what I'm going to see it for.
I could see this because they made a really big deal of the granddaughter of Elvis Presley, but it would have been fine with me if they just said who made her feature debut in The Runaways, because in this Slash Film article that I'm going to have in the show notes, it says Riley, aka the granddaughter of Elvis Presley, who made her feature debut in The Runaways, which is kind of a throwaway fact, but I would just put it as The Runaways because that's what she's from. And I heard that was actually a pretty good movie. I mean, let's give her the claim to fame, not as the granddaughter of Elvis Presley, but as as but being some,
somebody is encouraging her to use that to her advantage. So,
oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, like, clearly she's not one of those people. She's not a Tori Spelling who walked in there under a pseudonym and auditioned for 90210 because she didn't want to be known as the producer, you know, with Aaron Spelling's right. daughter. She's not a rebel like that. Rebel like Tori Spelling. you know, she's somehow bilking it. She's going to use it to her full advantage to see if it gets her in a door.
Right.
Interesting factoid. Doesn't yeah. deserve a blog post on every single block. That's all I got to say. Although, unless they highlight it more with, oh, by the way, the Fury Road is actually going to be about Mad Max is actually is going to be escorting this group known as the Five Wives that he has to protect from the bad guys as they travel from point A to point B.
Right.
Hey, so that's cool.
It's a continuation. And then, it's a continuation from Thunderdome. So, rather than a reboot, is yeah. what they're saying.
To yeah, it's a sequel, and it stars Riley, who just happens to be the granddaughter of Elvis Presley, made her feature debut in the Runaways. I think the more important news is more about the plot, because I didn't know that before. Did you see, right. guys see anything about them? Mm-hmm. I think that's the more important news, not the fact that Riley is in the movie. That would be part of the news that she's going to be one of the five wives. But right.
Like I said, this smells of publicists. So it's not the fact that it's news. It's that it's their job to make it the news. So they feed stories to people. They make it seem like it's a big deal and people take and run with it. So.
Sounds good. Moving on. Let's move on to actually something. I'm going to actually do a little juggle of our lineup here. Let's talk about Kevin Smith.
Okay.
Kevin Smith hasn't had a movie out in a while, has he? He had the
Zach and Mary.
No, that Bruce Willis movie. Damn it. He was a cop, black guy.
Terry. Oh, wait. I think I know what you're talking about there.
Which ended up sounding absolutely awful.
Is it the Terry Crews movie, right?
No, I don't think his last name is Terry Crews. It was called Cop Out.
No.
That's the last film he directed with Tracy Morgan. I'm sorry.
Oh, right.
Tracy Morgan. Where it was kind of a buddy cop comedy thing. Yeah. Well, now he's going to be putting on another movie soon here called Red State, which is supposed to be a... Well, where did it say the plot line here? It says a film that's based in part on a sham preacher, Fred Phelps, and his Westboro Baptist Church. But now it's a log line of the film, which comes by STYD, that clarifies things slightly, saying a group of kids encounters a crazed preacher based on Fred Phelps, founder of the Westboro Baptist Church, who gives a whole new meaning to the term extreme fundamentalism.
Yeah. I mean, are either you two, I mean, other than, are you guys fans of Kevin Smith as far as film-wise, or, because I've been hearing things about this particular movie for a long time. He's been working on this for at least writing it for a while. I remember hearing stuff about it back in probably the Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back days in 2001. So,
oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Because I liked that movie. I liked Dogma.
Yeah, I mean, for me, Kevin Smith movies are come and go. Some mm-hmm. I've really enjoyed. Dogma was one I really enjoyed.
I could care less about Clerks myself.
Yeah. I love the Jersey trilogy. That to me, that because mm-hmm. that was my first exposure to him. And, you know, it was 94, it was right after I got out of high school. So it was like right up my alley, you know, kind of. I identified a lot with mm-hmm. the people in the movie. So,
yeah, I think the films in and of themselves quality, they're good movies. Some of them I like, some of them I don't, but that doesn't really mean that much.
Right. But I think it's interesting to kind of see what his take on, like, you know, a horror flick is going to be like. So I'm interested.
Excellent. Sorry, doing show notes stuff. All right. So are you interested in this, Steven?
I am. I'm just still trying to figure out what it's all about. You know, like how he's going to turn Fred Phelps into a horror movie. I think that's kind of...
Well, I think he already is a horror movie.
Yeah, well, as I said that, I take that back. No, but I heard the words come out of my mouth, and I'm like, okay, that does make sense. Those are two great tastes that great together.
Well, this is probably going to be a comedy horror movie.
Sure, yeah.
He's going to exaggerate the Fred Phelps character somehow, make him like laughably scary
people or some kind of something. Yeah.
It's going to probably be more. Well, I wouldn't be surprised if it's along the lines of Scream, which is just funny. Or maybe Scary Movie, but I mean, kind of along that type of Scary Movie type thing, except it's going to be Kevin Smith. So he's probably going to figure out a way that's just actually going to make it actually good.
Well, see, I don't think he's going to go... Well, I could be wrong, but I don't think he's going to go for the comedic horror thing, because all the times I've heard him talk about this, he's talked about doing a straight-up horror flick. So he's never mentioned anything about it being funny or, you know... He could be keeping that a secret for all I know, but everything... And every time I've heard him talk about it, either, you know, when he's been interviewed or he talks about it for all the time on his podcast... it's always seemed to be pretty legit, up and up, straight up, gore, scary flick kind of thing. So,
okay, we'll see what happens when it gets closer. But moving on to something that's actually going to have a relation to our very next show, by the way, we're going to start off with the release of 5 film posters of movies starring Lucas Lee. For those people who do not recognize that name, Lucas Lee is the character that Chris Evans plays in Scott Pilgrim versus the World. And now we've got movie posters of movies that this character has been in. And I have to say, they're
kind of... I think it's funny.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
It is kind of funny. And I just think it is pretty cool. Action Doctor tagline. The good news is you're going to live. The bad news is he is going to kill you. Which makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah.
Let's hope there's a heaven. Tagline, kiss me, I'm dying. The game is over too. One good cop is finished fooling around again.
I like that. Thrilled to be here. Spencer J is awesome. You're welcome. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
I just think these posters are just awesome. Then
you just don't exist. Cole Hazard just got a call saying he has 89 minutes to live from himself.
So yeah, they're pretty funny, and it just kind of gets me more excited for the film to see, you know, if the guys making the film had as much fun and creativity as making these posters, then I think we're in for a decent ride here. So makes me excited.
And speaking of the film and something else to excite you, why not listen to some of the music? Because everybody knows that Scott Pilgrim's in a band called Sex Bobon. Yeah. And so of course there's gonna be soundtrack, which is essentially Beck. And over in Spinner.com, they actually have both the score and the soundtrack available for streaming for free. They're Spinner.com/new releases. I started streaming it earlier. Not much of a fan.
No.
I think it's more of, it's not my type of music.
Mm.
Than really me considering it bad or good. It was kind of cool. You just popped in there, selected whether you want the score or the album. They have some other things on there.
And this is
stream full thing.
this was an actual official release, right? Not something that's going to get yanked down by the studios.
Well, I'm sure that it eventually, I mean, this is probably going to be for a limited time that
right.
they have this up. But they have a link to buy the album.
Okay.
So it is definitely promotion of the actual soundtrack. They've got, it starts off, "We are Sex Bomb." Black, Black Lips, Crashing the Boys, T-Rex, the Blue Tones.
So it was a couple weeks ago, somebody leaked out some extended snippets of the Tron Legacy soundtrack, so...
This looks legit.
Yeah, this is a promotional post to Springer, and I wouldn't be surprised if eventually here it's gonna be taken down. Like, this is a limited time only thing. So pop over there and go ahead and play the full CD, and then heck, if you like it, buy it. There's a link right there.
And like he said, it's definitely clearly it's both. Yeah, you know, you have the red is the pop music soundtrack, and the blue is the score. So there's two options to listen to.
Cool.
There are 38 tracks in the score.
Yeah, I was like, holy crap, I keep scrolling.
Well, I think there's probably like some of these are not very long. They've got a song in there from Beck and the score, soundtrack, and like there's four bonus tracks, which are probably more... Like, these are stuff that would be actually from the movie, so they're not necessarily going to be like the full tracks or anything necessarily. So
just little cues here and there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool. Exactly. All right. And that is the news. I would like to actually talk about some feedback here, which isn't really feedback. We're going to call this an iTunes shout out because we do got people going up there onto iTunes and actually submitting one. We got a 5-star review from Visions.
Hooray!
Vision says, "This is one of the few movie podcasts that gives you great reviews, news, and film trivia all in one package. They do their research and it shows. Stop reading this and go listen already."
Yeah. Cool. Thank you.
Yay, thank you.
He listened to our podcast? Anyways.
Hey.
Where were we? Oh. I don't mind, but you better promise me I'll be back in time. Going back in time, we go into a movie which goes back in time. It is 12 Monkeys, starring Bruce Willis, Madeline Stowe, and Brad Pitt, directed by Terry Gilliam. And you know what? Hey, guess what? Griff is back!
In a future world devastated by disease, a convict is sent back in time to gather information about the man-made virus that wiped out most of the human population. 12 Monkeys stars Bruce Willis, Madeline Stowe, Brad Pitt, and Christopher Plummer.
Oh, and also Christopher Plummer. But I think this really is...
party foul.
Mainly the Brad Pitt, Madeline Stowe, Bruce Willis combo. Basically, Cole Bruce goes back in time, basically to do some research to find out information about the Army of the 12 Monkeys. And yes. Hilarity ensues.
Well, you know, the thing about this movie, and maybe it's because we had just gotten done watching Inception, is this kind of kept striking me as sort of like the Inception for its time, kind of. Not as complicated, mm-hmm. not as complex.
Mm-hmm. I could see that, though.
But basically a lot of multiple... sort of, I don't know how to word this, like time travel within time travel sort of thing, like a dream within a dream.
Mm-hmm. Kind of.
Yeah, kind of. So
we're going back and going back all the time, it definitely seemed like he couldn't figure out exactly which reality he was in or wanted to be in. You know what I mean?
So it
was
right. Rough. And yeah. that's where the thing with Inception came to me, is the whole thing is he's questioning whether or not what he's seeing is real or not. You know, yeah. Am I crazy? Am I not crazy?
Past? Is he in the future? Is this
yeah.
reality?
Yes, exactly. I mean, this movie is totally identifiable as a Terry Gilliam movie. I mean, for anybody who's seen any of his past stuff, Brazil, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, The Fisher King, I mean, it's all, I mean, he's got a really, really identifiable style. And I tend to dig his movies, so I found this one, you know, I've probably seen this movie, probably, this is probably my sixth or seventh time seeing this movie, so.
Which is funny, because as I was watching the movie, I was just like, I know I started watching this at one point, but I guess I never finished it. And I don't know why. It might have been one of those ones that I had rented on Netflix and then got it home and started watching it, and then was like, oh, I'm never going to finish watching this, so I sent it back.
Okay.
I think it was just a moment or something, but because I hadn't seen it all the way through. So I was actually, I really enjoyed it. It, like you said, though, you know, I still feel very confused by some things in it. You know, I'm definitely still feeling like the first time I saw Pulp Fiction, where I was just like, huh?
Whoa, whoa. It's a non-linear story.
Exactly.
You're not doing... Now, the weird thing about this movie is it's a non-linear movie, meaning that it takes place in all these different periods and times, but it is a linear movie because it's to Cole, everything is moving forward. Like, this is what happens, and this happens, and this happens, and this happens. It's just that he ends up bouncing around back in time. Right. He goes back to what, I think it was 1990.
Mm-hmm.
Then he comes back. Then he goes back to like 1940 or something like that.
Yeah,
he goes
40.
Way overshoot.
It's like 1917, World War One.
Yeah, and gets a gunshot wound. Comes back, and then he jumps back to 1996. I think it was.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which was the actual point that he needed to go to.
Well,
then he goes back, and then he comes back to 1996.
It basically goes to show that the people sending him back in time were not very good at what they did, because they just kept... It's like, oh, yeah, we're going to send you right here. Oh, you're in World War One.
Why do you think they were using convicts?
Yeah.
Because they didn't want to test this out on themselves. I mean, the most competent people to do what they wanted to do would have been the scientists that were sitting there at that table.
Right.
It wasn't... these convicts that they were sending back, the volunteers.
Well, you got to remember, they also did say that the reason why they picked him is that he was able to remember things. So there's a certain part of his physiology that they were using, because he was able to recall memories and things that he saw.
He either had a photographic memory or some kind of, he had some special trait.
Yeah. So yeah, I got that they were kind of looking for people that had, you know, the abilities that they needed to go back in time. And
I think without giving it all away too, I think some of it, you know, is that his experience as a child, that he was kind of at.
Right. Cause he was there.
Yeah. He was there at patient zero or whatever you want to call it in this virus.
Right.
Situation, or at the, you know.
They never make it entirely clear whether or not the people that are sending him back in time know that he was there or not. I mean, the audience obviously knows, because you're watching him remember that and seeing the dream sequence, but they never really quite say whether or not they had the ability to extract that, or if he told them about his dreams or whatever.
Right.
Or maybe they had the manifest or something from all the flights going out of that airport, you know, that said that he was a passenger.
Could be.
That's the only other thing that I thought of. So.
Well, he was definitely handpicked for that for whatever reason. So, you know, kudos. But Brad Pitt, again, you know, I think, you know,
oh,
like,
my God.
He was hilarious in this movie.
Yep.
And I think I've just decided in general, I put the note there that says, like, just Brad Pitt plays good crazy.
Oh, yes.
He just plays good crazy.
He was amazing in this movie.
Yeah. Just wackadoo. You know, he can go from stoner to, you know, hallucination to just whack job. Like, he is good at just being a chameleon and just being goofy. And that crazy eye just freaked me out.
How the hell did he do that?
That creepy eye.
It looked like some sort of contact on there.
Yeah, it was red. I mean, it was clearly not, you know, his normal eye. But you know, I'm sure it was just a clear contact or something, you know, something on the inside where he was seeing through perfectly. But that crazy eye was just awesome. That just like totally set him off the entire movie.
And his crazy was literally a good crazy. I mean, when you have an actual crazy person, isn't like a crazy person that most people would act out a crazy person. Mm-hmm. It's like what Brad Pitt just did. It's like, dude, that is perfectly the guy who belongs there.
Well, you know, I put this in the notes. He was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor for this movie, but he lost it to Kevin Spacey from The Usual Suspects. So,
I mean, I think, too, that in his case, what's tough is that he's an extremely intelligent person with a lot of he's one of those people, it's like, you don't want these people to be crazy because they have the ability to get to a bunch of resources,
right,
as well as are intelligent. So like they're the ones who will build their own nuclear bomb and shoot it off. You know what I mean? Like kind of thing. Like because he's got the ability to get to the resources. He's got the intelligence. He's got the money. He's got the everything, you know. But yeah, I thought that was quite interesting how they played that up.
But you know, the other thing I noticed in this movie is that we saw an awful lot of Bruce Willis's backside in this movie, a whole lot, because he was just constantly getting scrubbed down and he's running around naked, and I just thought it was funny. I'm like, oh, there's his butt again.
But you got to see Brad Pitt's too,
yeah,
in the one scene.
I don't know it. Like I said, this movie, this is a perfect example of a movie that, to me, anyway, is, you know, is complex without being over complex. And the funny thing about it was that I guess the Terry Gilliam, he had really wanted to make this movie and didn't think that the studios would be interested at all in making it, because he had gone round and round. I don't know if either of you guys have ever seen Brazil. But he had gone round and round and fought the studios when he made that movie, because that movie is another very sort of visually striking, very bizarre sort of science fiction-y movie. And that didn't do so well in the box office, but it's kind of considered like a cult sort of movie these days. So he was really shocked when the studio was kind of all about making this movie. The big thing that he had to fight with them on this was he wanted to cast Jeff Bridges as Cole, and the studios didn't think that he was a big enough star at the time, hadn't made anything huge at the time, so they wanted somebody bigger, and Bruce really wanted to work with Terry Gilliam, to the point where Bruce actually worked for free on this movie and didn't get any money until actually after it had been released and was doing so well in the box office. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. How many people do you hear that from these days?
Yeah. Well, I guess if you really want to work with somebody, you know, they didn't think they would be able to afford Bruce, because his going rate at the time was way expensive. And he's just like, well, I really want to work with you guys, so I'm just going to work for free.
I got some spare money. I'll just hang out. You know, if I happen to act during this thing.
Mm-hmm. The wifey's out making movies too. So,
So I thought that was pretty interesting. But like I said, I really enjoy this movie. It's Terry Gilliam. I like him as a director. I like most of his stuff. Some people find his stuff a little too bizarre, but the first Terry Gilliam movie I ever saw was Time Bandits, and I mean, that's like a movie that defined part of my childhood, I think. So,
oh my God, Time Bandits, crazy stuff.
Is this going to be another movie added to our list?
Time Bandits? That's definite possibility.
All right. Well, I'm glad we did. What I find was interesting, this is probably my third or fourth time seeing this movie, and I just noticed a few things I get about this. It's just this real interesting how they foreshadow who actually begins this, begins the virus, the release of the virus. in the first place, how he shows up to his signing to the psychologist. I can't remember her name. And I have no idea how he ends up coming to this explanation of why he did it at all. It never actually goes about that story, but it shows the story of someone trying to find that out, going crazy with this constant back and forth in time, and then eventually just looping around. Spoiler alert, if you didn't realize that we were going to have spoilers already, seeing himself killed, even though he never realizes that that's what he does.
Right. As he started to remember, or as they kind of put it, he was seeing the dream differently as the movie progressed, where he would see more and more, and he would realize, oh, you know, that was you that I saw. And things started to kind of click into place eventually. One thing I didn't really understand, though, and I've watched this movie a bunch of times and I still don't get it, is after he left the message at the end of the movie, why did they force him to do the gun thing? That's what I don't get. Why did it have to be him? Why couldn't the other guy, Jose or whatever it was, do what needed to be done? Why did it have to be Bruce Willis's character? That's the only part of it that I was kind of like, I'm still going, eh? You know?
Good question, which I don't have an answer for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm. So, just one of those things. It's,
if anyone has out there in podcast land has an opinion, feel free to let us know.
Yeah, please. Fill me in. Give me a clue.
Anything else, or should we tell you what we learned on this?
What have we learned?
We have learned we are all monkeys. The people on the outside are just as crazy as the ones on the inside. Monkeys make very good sandwich delivery systems. I'm not even sure where that one came from.
There's a scene in the movie where they're throughout the whole movie, they're trying to get this boy out of a well.
Right.
And they take a monkey with a roast beef sandwich. There's supposedly 12 monkeys in the movie. So if you watch, you can count 12 monkeys. And one of the monkeys has an infrared camera on his head, and is they give him a roast beef sandwich in a bag, and they lower him into the well. So. I gotcha.
Totally forgot about that. Anyways, foot tapping in the airport bathroom always gets you into trouble.
I just thought it was funny that there was a guy in the bathroom. So
I got that. Airport security was a joke in 1996.
Yeah.
This is a definite buy. You might want to just rent it first, just to see if you like it. It is a little bit of a mind twister. But I say screw the renting. Just buy the darn thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I love it. Like I said, it's proof that a movie, an Inception-like movie that really screws with your brain, doesn't have to be overly complex to really mess with you. And the funny thing is, I thought I owned this movie, and I don't.
I seriously
thought I owned it. And I'm looking through all my DVDs. I'm like, where the heck is this movie? And I went through my list in Delicious Library, and I don't have it. I'm like, I don't have this movie.
Yeah. When I picked this movie, I was like, I don't have this movie? Really?
And all I can say is I'm apparently the unintelligent one of the group because I'm still confused. But I think I enjoyed it.
No.
I did, though. I watched it all the way through, and I was like, ooh.
Think you enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'm like, I think I enjoyed it.
I might have.
Mm-hmm. Possibly.
All I gotta say is, Griff, take it away.
The ongoing war between the canine and the feline species is put on hold when they join forces to thwart a rogue cat spy with her own sinister plans for conquest.
Yeah, that was really easy. There's a little bit more to it. I suppose that actually goes in later. So Cats and Dogs, this is actually a sequel to a 2001 movie called Cats and Dogs. This is Cats and Dogs, Revenge of Kitty Galore. Story is that Kitty Galore, who was part of the feline team known as Meows, she was doing something in a pair removal factory, and a dog somehow forced her into a vat of hair removal, and all of her hair was removed.
Two-Face, you know, kind of.
Mr. Bigglesworth, come on.
Yep.
So she got out of that. She went back to her home. Her people, her family didn't recognize her and shoot her away. And now she wants revenge against the dogs. She's got the call of the wild sound that will cause all dogs to go crazy. And she will play it in so much time. And so they have to figure out where she is, how she's going to release this and stop her at all costs. And the Cats and Dogs, Meows, and what was the dog's wing called? Paws or something like that. I don't know.
Bone?
But the dog secret agent, the dog secret agency, they have to get together and find her. So it's about the trip that their new agent Diggs goes through for that, and he was a police dog that never listened and was fired from the force. So we got that sad sap story on that, and then he was given this job as part of the dog secret agencies. So what did you guys think?
Ugh.
It was okay. I can get into some kids movies. I'm good. I'm down. You know, the ironic thing is that I was at a meeting in Ybor City the whole day, and I actually had some time to kill between when we got done and when the actual movie started. Mm-hmm. So I went and watched Despicable Me first and then went to see this. Mm-hmm. Despicable Me was so much better. But but my point just being that, like, I was clearly in a kid's movie kind of mind, you know, when I went to go see it, because I had just gotten out of Despicable Me. And so, you know, I let go and just kind of watched it and went through it and stuff like that. And you know, it's a secret agent movie. It's a quest film. It's clearly suspension of belief. Mm-hmm. But Cat Williams was freaking hilarious through the whole thing. The pigeon.
Yeah, he's my favorite thing.
Oh, my God. As annoying as he was hilarious. His lines, he just dropped bombs the entire movie.
Mm-hmm.
What is your fallback position?
He's pretty much the only reason why I laughed in this movie for the most part. I mean, he kept cracking me up. The other part of the movie that I enjoyed was the opening credits. Just because it was such an homage to James Bond.
Oh, it was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was cool.
It was already started with the Shirley Bassey version.
Yeah,
right.
Which, of course, Shirley Bassey did four of the James Bond themes.
Right. So, I mean, you have the crazy things floating around and the silhouettes and all typical James Bond intro sort of stuff.
That was awesome.
So that I thought was cool. What I didn't really get, it's like, okay, yes, this is a kid's movie. There's some things in this movie, like, okay, the whole Silence of the Lambs sequence. Yeah. What kid is going to know? Yeah. That's clearly got to be for the, you know, adults that are going to be watching this. And it's like, I don't know. I kind of would have enjoyed this more, you know, maybe if I had some younger people around to watch it with, and you know, but I don't know. It wasn't doing anything for me. I don't think there was anything in this movie that we hadn't seen before. Especially with the first one. And I liked the first one. I own the first one. Oh. You know? So, you know, it was just this one. I was just like, really? This is, again, another thing. It's like Avatar sequel. Do we really need a sequel? You know? There were just some things that bugged me. Like the whole hairless cat thing. It's like, okay, we've seen this before. You know, every long-haired Persian seems to find a way to lose all their hair and turn into a sphinx for some reason. and I think the whole, like, the fact that they pretty much, I mean, that was all CG, obviously, for the most part. I think that was really throwing me off. I didn't mind so much when they did the straight up animal sort of stuff with the augmented CG talking and whatnot, but
right.
The whole Kitty Galore character just didn't do it for me. Sorry, Bette. Couldn't do it.
I liked her though. I liked her in it though.
Yeah.
But yeah, I made the notation too about that. I don't know if it was the 3D or if it was the CG, but there were times where the characters, some of the animals looked distorted.
Mm-hmm.
At times, I especially noticed it on the cat, the female cat
mm-hmm.
agent. At times, like, her head looked oblong or her felt like her, you know, they had blocked out her entire face and moved her face toward the camera or something. And it was just these odd little, I was like, oh, is my glasses? No. Is it my glasses? You know, I was like, or is it just funky? So, I mean, there were definitely some aspects of it that either within the 3D, you know, I guess I'm sure it's upconverted. But either the up conversion or the, you know, or the CG processes, they had a couple little misses.
Now I have a question for you guys. Did you guys both? Obviously, you guys both saw it in 3D.
I did. Yep.
Okay. Now the theaters that you saw it in 3D at, did they have it not in 3D?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't remember.
They don't have it available. The theater by my house. If you wanted to see it not in 3D. You had three choices, all of which were like 10 o'clock in the morning, like noon, and 3 o'clock was the latest one. Like three showings a day, not in 3D. Everything else was in 3D. That's the only one that played throughout the day on the screens.
I think on this, that the 3D didn't feel like it really added anything. Mm-hmm. I think if you didn't see it in 3D, you wouldn't really have noticed.
Yeah, I don't think you would have missed a whole lot.
So I don't think it's any big a deal to see it in one way or another. So if you're not too thrilled but kind of want to see the movie in the theater,
go see it cheaper.
Go see it 2D. Yeah, I mean, that's just fine. Here's the reason why I thought it was worth seeing in 3D. It wasn't the movie. It was the cartoon in front of it. Looney Tunes is back, baby! And there was a Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner tune called Coyote Falls right ahead of it. And I was laughing so freaking hard during that entire thing. I think I was also kind of making a fool of myself because I don't think anybody was laughing with me.
As long as nobody was laughing at you, you're all right.
No, I think people were probably enjoying it, but didn't think it was as funny as I thought it was. I just thought it, of course, here's one thing that it was about the day I saw this. This was the same day that I only had 15 minutes to work at my job, which mm-hmm. was the last 15 minutes I was working at that job.
Mm-hmm.
And then I walked out. It was just cool that it was filming 15 minutes. I didn't have to stay there all day because I knew they were going to.
Right.
That was my last day anyways. And they said, oh, it's our last day. We'll pay you for the full ones. We'll just let you go early. You know, that's, you know, 15 minutes after you get here and after you've had a couple breakfast tacos. But that's beside the point. So I was just fired from my job. And then I go see this in the afternoon. And it's
needed a chuckle. You needed a chuckle.
It was, yeah, exactly. And it's a Coyote and Roadrunner cartoon. So it was all about Wile E. Coyote getting his ass handed to him, not directly by the road, because of the Roadrunner. And it was, I don't know what it was. It it was just so freaking funny. I bet you anything that if I go back and see that movie again, which, you know what, I really like this movie. I really like Cats and Dogs. I mean, it's not the greatest movie in all the world, but I really enjoyed it. And I would still probably laugh again as hard as I did the first time. Maybe not as hard, but because I'd seen it already. But just seeing that shot of the coyote bungee jumping down to grab the Roadrunner with a knife and fork in his hand and his tongue playing around in 3D right there in front of my face. I was in heaven, in cartoon heaven right there. Looney Tunes.
Is it better than Night and Day?
Yes, I would call that better than Night and Day. Night and Day was clever and cute. But it wasn't as entertaining as Coyote Falls.
Huh.
That's what I have to say.
Well, unfortunately, this is probably one of the first ones that I've just got to be like, skip it. It just wasn't doing it for me. Maybe if I had young kids, maybe I would take them to see it. Other than that.
Yeah, I should. I mean, I definitely should have considered this being one of those family movies and brought the nieces and nephew to it. Because I would have liked to watch their reactions. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, in that kind of thing. But I'm with you, Fuzz. You know, like, I guess being one of the older people who saw this movie, going in and seeing a lot of those references to movies made sense to me. I wouldn't have thought about it from the kid perspective. So I'm glad you brought that up, because definitely I'm like, yeah, what kid is going to understand the Silence of the Lambs stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Makes no sense.
What kid's going to understand the homage to all the James Bond stuff that they had?
Right,
there?
Exactly. That too. You know, so now that you said that, it made mm-hmm. sense to me. You know, so now it makes me question, what was their audience and what was their intended audience for this? Well, and
you could look at it this way: is kids aren't going to see this movie by themselves. Their parents true.
You
got to
entertain the parents. You got to entertain the parents.
So to get the entertainment parents at least a little bit into it, you know, their main focus is the kids that they brought, but they're. But they wanted to throw in some homages, some little jokes that the parents would get, so that they have something that would kind of entertain them. And I love that beginning intro credits thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was perfect.
Oh yeah, it was great. I just wouldn't consider the whole Silence of the Lambs thing a tiny homage. I mean, that's like a whole set piece built around them. That movie.
Yeah, but I mean, unfortunately, it's something that ended up being a longer scene. But I mean, I think the older people who know the Silence of the Lambs would get that and understand it and enjoy that. And then that would be that's one of the segments out of all this entire movie that they would they're kind of the focus of it. I mean, it's such a good parody that mm-hmm. there's this cats doing this Hannibal Lecter impression, essentially, in there.
Right.
So it's one of their emotions. Something to give some sort of entertainment to the adults. I was entertained by them all, but maybe it's just the little kid in me. It's a Cats and Dogs movie. I was coming into this thinking, this is all a kid's movie. So I was totally thinking, you know, I was bringing out the 8-year-old chef in me.
Oh yeah, I'm totally down with seeing kids' movies. I have no problem with kids' movies. Sit me down in front of a TV and I'll watch cartoons and with the best of them. But to me, this was more about the fact that what was this movie going to give me that the first one didn't give me, and it didn't. You know, there was nothing. I didn't find
it. I didn't even see the first one, like I told you guys last week.
I own the first one. And, you know, I mean, I thought the first one was great. In fact, I think, if I remember correctly, I don't think it did too hot on Rotten Tomatoes, but I think Ebert and Roper gave it 2 thumbs up. I mean, it was a decent movie. I mean, it was the first kind of movie of its kind.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
This one, I don't know. I think a lot of the, like I said, a lot of the jokes and a lot of the things that were in it were sort of rehashes from the first one and things that we'd seen in other movies. And other than, what's his name? Seamus the Pigeon. I mean, he was cracking my shit up. But, yeah. So, you know, I just couldn't recommend this to people to go see. Not in the
maybe,
theater.
Maybe I'll take my dog to see it.
Take your dog.
Take your kids.
Quasi.
Yeah, Quasi. We'll take Quasi. Yeah.
Well, so here's what we learned about this movie. It's been 12 years. The hamster dance is still not funny. Okay. I don't know where that came in.
The hamster dance?
Yeah.
At the very end of the movie with the squirrel will self-destruct and then it does a little dance.
Yeah,
that's the hamster dance.
Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner cartoons are still hilarious after all these years. And those naked cats are kind of creepy.
I heard it's like holding someone's warm ass in your hands.
It's gonna be the future soon. I won't always be this way. When the things that make me weak and strange get engineered away. It's gonna be the future soon.
It's time to...
Sarah's still laughing. I can't hold it.
It's time. Okay. Now let's get a little bit serious here and talk about a trailer that we saw for this week, which is Howl, which is a story about poet Allen Ginsberg's seminal work, which broke down societal barriers in the face of infamous public obscenity trial. That's the poem called Howl. So
I have to ask you something, Jeff. Was there any sort of a theme going on when you picked these movies?
None at all, honestly.
Okay, because we got monkeys, cats, and dogs. Howl.
Oh. There was no intentional theme, at least.
Okay. Bestiality, anybody?
Bestiality?
Anyways,
where were we?
Moving on.
So, I know nothing about Allen Ginsberg, honestly. The name sounds familiar, but don't know.
Okay. Well, I don't know anything much about him either, other than I know that he was a poet. So, that really makes me curious. Where did you get the idea to talk about this? Did you see this in front of a movie?
I don't think I saw it in front of a movie. I just I think I saw the Slash Film posting of the trailer or something like that.
Okay. Yeah, because...
I need a trailer for this. Not sure what to put in here. Oh, I'll put this in.
Okay. I mean, I watched the trailer a couple times and did a little bit of research on Ginsberg, and he seemed like a very interesting guy. Mm-hmm. So the movie might, you know, if the movie isn't all about the obscenity trial, and if there's a lot of focus on kind of him and like what he was up to and what he was doing, then I would probably be into this. But if it's all about the trial, I don't know if it's going to do anything for me or really make me want to go see it.
Maybe it's going to be something kind of To Kill a Mockingbird-ish, where there's this trial which is happening throughout it, but there's also this kind of secondary storyline going on, which is actually, well, the main storyline is not the trial. It's just the story around the trial.
Right. I mean, it's like, 1957 or something like that, right?
Well, the Wikipedia page about the movie... It says is that the film consists of three interwoven aspects: the early life of Ginsberg in New York City and his evolution as a writer and poet, an animated reimagining of the poem Howl, and the obscenity trial in San Francisco. I don't know if it's going to be one of these going back and forth. Maybe Howl. I mean, you know, it could be one of those things where they're. It's about the performance of Howl and everything else is planted in the middle. You know what I mean? It could have been a little bit of all of that. Right. But whatever. I mean, especially with the title Howl, it makes me think that clearly the theme is it's going to be focused on the poem. So I could imagine that they do some flashing back. You know, it probably starts with him talking about it, and then, you know, I don't know. But there's a whole Wikipedia page, too, completely dedicated to Howl, the poem. It breaks it down. It pulls it apart. It does all kinds of analysis. I found that kind of interesting. But I'm not, you know, I'm not so informed. This is not my area of intelligence, unfortunately. So I feel a little out of touch.
Yeah, I mean, written and spoken poetry is not something I usually dabble in at all. So,
yeah.
I mean, reading about the guy himself, I find that interesting. I mean, he was a pretty out there guy. I mean, to the point where, and I didn't put this in the notes, but I was reading it earlier, that he joined NAMBLA as a way to protest, government oppression and things like that. I was like, wow. I mean, that's really going to an extreme. And I love the fact that he's like, people like the Catholic Church have been admiring young boys for years. Like, you know, what's the big deal? It's like, what? Oh, my God. So, yeah, he sounds like an interesting character for sure. You know, so that aspect of it is making me interested in seeing it.
Yeah, definitely like a performance artist almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The poetry part of it, I can give or take that, you know. So.
Well, I mean, I thought that it was an interesting point that it said that some of the different things I've said about this is that this is really about the landmark case establishing key legal precedent guaranteeing First Amendment rights for controversial literary works.
Right.
And, you know, I guess that's why I wasn't an English major or, you know, creative writing or poetry or any of that stuff, because I'm like, I don't remember this.
Mm-hmm.
If this was a seminal case, you know what I mean? Like if this was a precedent setting case on First Amendment rights and all that kind of stuff. So I'm like, oh, right. You know, I'm like, where did I miss this bus?
I don't remember the case, but the name Ginsburg does ring a bell. So
yeah.
I'm sure I've heard something about it, you know, in the past. So yeah, that's pretty much, I mean, like I said, he seemed like a pretty cool guy. I'll check it out. Maybe, you know, not something I'm going to totally seek out, but.
Yeah, I'm interested in, but we'll see what happens when it releases.
Yeah, when I think of Ginsburg, truth be told, I think of, you know, Ginsburg that was on the Supreme Court. You know, so I think that's probably my first. I mean, they're not even spelled the same, but I think when I hear that word, I tend to think of her. I think that's just my background, though. I mean, like I said, this is not my area of expertise.
Right.
You know, and when I was watching the trailer, I was actually thinking, I was thinking a lot about Kinsey for some reason.
Oh, okay.
There was a visual that I connected to Kinsey. As I was watching it, just because of maybe the time period and all that kind of stuff. And so, and I remember going into Kinsey going, I don't know if I'm going to care about this, even though I had more of a connection to the material because I had studied that and I had studied the Kinsey scale and my undergraduate work. So, you know, I was sitting there thinking maybe, you know, maybe. So maybe my connection with that will make me want to see this more maybe when we get to that point. But I'm not running out.
Wait, the funny thing about this trailer was, you know, I remember when he first put it on the list and stuff, and I didn't run out and find the trailer. And yesterday I was like, you know, I better watch this trailer before the podcast so I could talk about it. And for whatever reason, I got it in my head that it was Growl, not Howl.
Of course.
So I'm searching and searching for this trailer for this, and there is a movie called Growl that's coming out in 2011. So I'm like searching and searching and searching for this trailer, and I'm like, I cannot, like, there's production stills and pictures from it and summaries, and I'm like, where the heck is this trailer at? And I was like ready to like call Jeff and be like, where the hell am I supposed to see this at? But then I read the notes. I'm like, oh, wow. Oops.
When in doubt.
Silly.
When in doubt, you can
RTFM.
Go over. When in doubt, you can always go to youtube.com/COLmoviestrailers and take a look at the favorites list, because the next the trailer should be listed there. So I'm adding them as we're doing on our movies. Speaking of which, next week, we are going to be looking at Evangelion 1.11, You Are Not Alone. In the present, as kind of mentioned earlier, Scott Pilgrim versus the World, which I think we're all excited for.
Yay!
I can't wait for that. And Red, or R-E-D, take your pick. I prefer Red, just because the poster's red.
Stands anyway. For retired, extremely dangerous.
So you'll be able to see trailers for those movies. Go to youtube.com/COLmoviestrailers and check out the favorites list for Scott Pilgrim and Red. In fact, Scott Pilgrim's probably already in there, because we already talked about this in our excitement in a past episode. I forgot what episode that was. I'll be finding the Red trailer and adding that in. And I hope the trailer for Evangelion is on the DVD so I can get that up there.
You'd definitely be able to find it in online.
Yeah, if anything, I'll find some way of getting it. But don't forget to tell us what you think about these movies. Go to movies.comesoutloud.com and put a comment in our show notes. You can email us at colmovies@gmail.com. Shoot us a message by Twitter at twitter.com/colmovies. Facebook.com/colmovies. There is a discussions forum on the Facebook page. So if you want a forums for this, that's where we're going to have it, is right there. Just go to facebook.com/colmovies. Click on the discussions tab. And I'll post a discussion for this show as well. Don't forget, just like Vision set had done, go to iTunes and leave us a review, a 5-star review preferably. And we will give you a shout out on the show for sure. And I think that is it. So for Fuzz, for Steve, for me, good night, folks.
Bye.
Hasta la vista, baby.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
That'll do, dude.
That's the worst goodbye I've ever heard. And you stole it from a movie.
He's looking at you, kid.
End of line.